that this idea that fair means equal is a myth. And what we try to help moms and dads, individuals understand, is that fair is a perspective. What you think is fair and I think is fair, different equals, is a mathematical equation. 1 + 1 = 2. We can all agree on that. The only way to address it is in dialogue. And it is virtually impossible to make it fair for everybody. And so the only way that we maintain relationship as we think about passing wealth is we engage in dialogue.
Hello, and welcome to What's Next, a podcast from Parsion Private Wealth. I'm your host, Terry Cook. In What's Next, we discuss the difficult questions that arise when business owners and entrepreneurs begin to plan for their next chapter. The questions that present themselves through transitions like these often span a wide breadth, from complex financial strategies to emotional conversations around legacy considerations. So for whatever What's Next throws at you, we're here to help. Today we are discussing the important topic of legacy preservation and communicating with the next generation. Most successful business owners can relate to the fear of their wealth having a negative impact on their children and grandchildren. I hear it all the time. I don't want money to ruin my kids. So how do they avoid creating trust fund kids? By not normalizing wealth, are we helping to create the very problems we're hoping to avoid? When and how do we start conversations around money and wealth with our kids? To guide us through addressing these fears, we have Mike McGran joining us today. Mike is a thought leader, coach, and consultant at the Fidelity Center for Family Engagement. As a subject matter expert on families of wealth and family-owned firms, he leads the development, design, and delivery of resources to support successful wealth communication. Prior to his time at Fidelity, Mr. McGran has spent 25 years working closely with families, family offices, and their advisors around the world. He has taught and coached in the areas of entrepreneurship, strategic planning, and family enterprising, serving on the boards of several growing companies and as an advisor to large family firms. His work is focused on the challenges of growth and succession, communication, and the strategies and structures required for multi-generational success. Mike has led family business programs at two different universities and has conducted seminars for family businesses, executive education programs, and accreditation programs for family advisors. He holds an undergraduate degree in economics from Cornell University, an MBA from Wharton School of Business, and an MA in international studies, also from the University of Pennsylvania. He's the perfect person to help us through these topics. Let's dive in. So, Mike, thanks so much for joining today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So I'm just going to get right into it. The heart of a very common fear of many of the families we serve, and that's the fear of creating, I mean, you've heard it 1,000 times, trust fund kids, or more bluntly, not letting money ruin my kids. So, Mike, does money ruin kids?
Yeah, it's a great question, Terry. And you and I have chuckled about this a number of times because the pithy response to that question is, well, Terry, how much money ruins kids? Is it $10? Is it $10,000? Is it $10 million? And when you frame it like that, it's obvious that the answer is it's not about the money. It's about how the kids are raised and their relationship to money and wealth that really matters.
So the issue that we're talking about here, can you frame up like what is at the heart of the matter? Is it a communication issue? Is it an educational issue? And how do we know it's an issue?
So I think you're right, Terry. It is, as I said, it is how you raise the kids, what their relationship to wealth is, and that is a communication issue, and how we as parents communicate and talk about wealth. And wealth is a subject that is intertwined throughout our lives. And whether we have a little bit of money or a whole bunch of money, virtually every issue that we face in life, there's some component of wealth. And so the question then is, can we learn to talk about wealth? Can we normalize that discussion as parents? And oftentimes, to your point, the first question you ask is there's these myths, these fears that we have around money and talking about money. And one of the myths, like you've referenced, is money's going to ruin kids, or the kids aren't ready for the money. And this is so common. One of the things that we as parents often do then is, because we have these fears, some might be justified, oftentimes they're not, But we create distance. We avoid the conversation, or oftentimes we revert to hierarchical behavior, which can be quite damaging to relationships. And when I say hierarchical behavior, we like to distinguish between hierarchies, which are normal parts of every family. They're normal parts of organizations and societies. I shared with you, Terry, that I played college football, and if you put 11 meatheads in a huddle and we have a debate about, you know, what are we going to do on fourth and one, the whole program breaks down. So we need a hierarchy to make decisions. The risk in families is when we behave in what we refer to as a hierarchical manner. And that is something that we do as parents. We're all guilty of it, in which we say things like, this is none of your business. It's my money, not yours. You're not ready for this conversation. And what in effect we're doing, we're taking our fear and we're using, I'm the dad, we're the parents, you're the son, you're the daughter, and we're creating distance. And in that distance is damage to the relationship. So what we say is, yes, fears are natural, but can we be cognizant of the fact that when we engage in hierarchical behavior that creates distance from our kids, we're creating this danger sign around money. And that leads to many of the challenges we face. You know, I think Perry, I've shared an example before of a young man who grew up in a very, very wealthy family.
Right.
They had this perspective that wealth is bad and it's dangerous. And so they never talked to him about money. They never talked to him about wealth. They never exposed him to them. He knew they were wealthy. But, you know, he's a great kid, hardworking, got himself into a great college, got a great job working in Boston for an investment bank as a summer job. And the parents arranged for him to have a credit card. And next thing you know, he's calling up mom and dad saying, gosh, my credit card stopped working. What's going on? And it turns out that he had maxed out his credit card. It was at $25,000, but he had no idea how credit cards worked. He had no idea that, gee, at the end of the month, you got to pay it.
You actually have to pay it.
Yes, you got to pay it. And, you know, it's interesting because from his parents' perspective, it confirmed that, you know, money's bad and money's going to ruin a kid. And look at this kid who's acting so irresponsibly. And yet it's so obvious to an outsider that, you know, failure to talk about it, talk about wealth, talk about how you manage money, talk about paying bills is part of what the kid missed.
And they missed kind of this. Yeah, this self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's both, right? It's communication and education, right? In that example, not talking about it, not explaining how these things work, just kind of confirmed their fears, right? That that he's not ready to handle money.
You're so right, and you know, I used a word of self-fulfilling prophecy, and really, anytime you take a fear and inject it into a relationship, we so often pull out of the relationship the fear that we put in there. This is a classic example.
Yeah, and even beyond the anecdotes, I know you've quoted a couple statistics that kind of back this up, that there's a certain amount of, or there's a striking amount of a lack of communication around this.
Yeah, good point. So we've done some research on it. And what do we know about how most families talk about wealth? The answer is they don't. And 93% of wealth gets passed to death. 64% of wealthy individuals say that they have not talked with their family about how they plan to pass their assets. And this to me is stunning, that 50% of heirs over the age of 50 indicate that they only learned about their inheritance once their parents died. So we're not talking about it. And there's a risk there. There's a risk.
Well, the risk is, and we see it, and we've heard about it, and a lot of research done about it, the whole shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations, right? And this is universal. It's based in human behavior, which is you've done a lot of studying and working with. I found out, this is kind of interesting, and this is real. In China, they have the same saying, except it's rice paddy to rice paddy in three generations. No, so this is across cultures that this happens. So you know there's a certain amount of kind of behavioral issues. But the happiness of our kids and grandkids is probably, when you talk about legacy, that's probably our greatest goal, right? We work so hard, and we work here, as you know, at Parsion with family-owned business owners who are building something, and they're builders. How do you view legacy, and how does kind of this generational conversation tie into that definition, and where do you see things usually break down? I know there's a lot of questions there, but yeah. I guess it would start in the hierarchical behavior.
It does, but the word legacy is a fascinating and wonderful and amazing word, and to us, it's one of the most powerful concepts in for folks in this field. And one of the things we say about legacy is that it is the only thing that you can co-create after you are gone. Mm. And if you think about the profound nature of that reality, it is stunning. And we say that in much of a way, if you think about our country, the founding fathers of our country, the folks who wrote the U.S. Constitution, we as individuals living today are co-creating our democracy live. And co-creating with those individuals who died some 250 years ago. And in the same way, we as individuals can co-create our legacy. And the question then is who is part of that co-creation team with you? And it's really about the people you love. And when people think of legacies, they often think about, you know, the statue I left or the building I built or the business I have or the wealth or whatever it is. And that's certainly how we accumulate it, is no doubt part of our legacy. But equally important are the relationships that accompany that. And so back to this idea, if we think of legacy as something that we can co-create after we are gone, the next question becomes, who is part of our co-creation team? And that is typically the folks that we love. We are, as we families, individuals that have some means, are typically work with an advisor like you, Terry. And we often say to folks, you know, we want you to think about who are the folks that are going to be impacted by the decisions that you are making with your advisor. And we want you to think about those folks who are going to be impacted, the folks that you love, your husband, your wife, your kids, your grandkids, the fill in the blank, the schools. All of these are potentially part of your co-creation team. And we want you to begin, what we would like to see individuals of wealth do, is begin engaging in dialogue around their wishes, their hopes. I've created some wealth. What are the wishes and hopes and dreams that I have for this wealth? Yes, the building. Yes, the fill in the blank. But in terms of how it impacts you and our lives, and that is the opportunity we have in co-creation.
No, I like that. And, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, I feel like you're talking about there too. And just even to realize about legacy and the just the co-creation aspect and who do we want on that team, that's using reflection, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it starts. And then, you know, we're going to get into what tools that maybe parents and grandparents can use to help kind of foster these discussions so they can make sure that their money doesn't ruin their kids. Can you talk just a little bit about how powerful reflection is in that process?
Yeah. I mean, so the idea of reflection, the idea that I'm going to pause and think beyond myself, think about the impact of this, the role that I play in this system. So as an individual has created some wealth, am I able to, ideally with an advisor, because they're outside, they're not in your immediate family. They're part of the wealth system, we would argue, but not in the immediate family. And think about what are the impact, what will be the outcomes of my decisions today? And when we can sit and talk with our spouse or a trusted outsider and think, what will be the intended outcome or intended consequences of a decision I'm making today about my wealth and how and who I'm passing it to? As well as, and this is the tricky one, is begin reflecting on and thinking about the unintended outcomes, the unintended consequences. That's a really wonderful thing. And when we do that, then begin engaging those whose lives are impacted. The classic example, one is we see all the time, in which you have a family of three or four, and mom and dad are worried about one of them. And so they make the older brother, older sister, the trustee for the younger one's trust. And while, you know, good intentions, but the unintended consequences are really rough for that person who ends up the trustee for their brother, their little kid brother or sister.
Right.
So that idea of intended outcomes, unintended outcomes, intended consequences, unintended consequences is a powerful reflection that as we are creating our estate plans, we like to see folks of wealth do. And then I'll just add, Terry, because it builds on a question you asked earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, it could be scary to engage with our co-creation team, talk about our estate, talk about our money, our wealth, and our estate plans with this, quote, co-creation team, because we're opening up, you know, this, we're talking about wealth. And one of the concepts, to your point, Terry, is we like to help individuals think about the difference between voice and vote. And one of the fears is that if I talk about my wealth with my kids, I'm giving up control. And our reframing of that fear is that just because we're giving a voice to folks that we love in the room about an issue that's going to impact our life doesn't mean they have the final vote. Mom and dad still get the final vote.
Super powerful. And so let's take just a half step backwards, because it ties into the fact that you were talking about hierarchical behaviors, and then we're maybe raising awareness about the power of reflection. And then it comes like, how do we recognize, or what's a tool that we can use to help us recognize when we're falling into that hierarchical behavior? You talk about the concept of peership. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. I mean, so you're right. It's tricky, as we all know, because we're humans and we're parents and we all have all done it. And it's hard to recognize in the moment. Sometimes only someone outside, like a spouse or a son or daughter, can recognize that. One of the points of reflection, I want to come to the point of peership, because at one level, to your point, peership is an anecdote for hierarchical behavior. And what peership reflects is a sense of a commitment to mutuality, a commitment to acknowledging that your voice is as important as my voice, that we can treat each other as equals, as peers, and we do it within the hierarchy. And so this idea of peership, you and I, Terry, are here as peers. We're interacting as peers. We're in dialogue as peers. But if I come to work for you, I'm not going to be, and I've got to recognize at the end of the day, you're the boss. So if you say that this podcast is over, go home, Mike, it's done. I got to go home. And at the same time, we can interact as peers. So the ability to understand the hierarchy, who's the boss, who's got the vote, and at the same time, treat each other as peers, as equals, in mutual relationship, in listening and asking of questions, that's the ticket right there. But again, to your point, we're all humans and we screw it up. And if we as parents can give permission to our spouse, if we can give permission to our kids to say, hey, you know, it feels like you're kind of dad, you're being dad. Can we sit down and talk as peers here and do it with a smile on our face? Sometimes that can change the game.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And ever since you and Tobias came and spoke at our event, our client event last fall, I've been thinking a lot about that and trying to kind of recognize when I fall into these patterns. And Tobias used a great example. I felt like he and I are living similar lives, because I have a 14-year-old, right? And and shoes are a big thing with 14-year-old boys, right? And he's shopping for his shoes with, you know, most of his money. I'd say, hey, you know, I'll pay for half, you pay for half. And he's out there, and I don't understand what a 14-year-old boy wants these days. It's usually the most outlandish thing. And, you know, whatever their favorite basketball player is promoting. But I'm always back to, you know, last year's model is half as much. So think about that. And you'll still have all this money left over. And he says, yeah, but I want this, but yeah, but just think what else you could do with the extra money. And we end up with all of these shoes at home, brand new, that he never wears, but he wears his old, you know, beat up ones that you know, for whatever reason that he likes. And, you know, you ask him about that. And he's like, you know, Dad, they're just not cool. Or Dad, those, I just don't like those as much. Or it usually comes back, they don't feel the same. And then I reflect on that conversation, and he bought the shoes that I wanted him to buy and the logical choice and they, you know, subsequently they never get worn. So I'm learning to recognize those moments where I'm not practicing peership. And I guess it's just good practice to foster those harder, even harder conversations, right, around money and wealth.
Yeah, and the complement to that very scenario, because I've lived it too with three mm-hmm. boys, is having boundaries clear. So as the parent, we have the ability to decide what the boundaries are, but that within those boundaries, what level of peership? So, you know, are you contributing 20, 40, 50, 100 bucks to the shoes? And then once you've decided, act in peership. And hey, it sounds like this seems pretty expensive, but you know, it's your call. That's right. The trick, you know?
And so, you know, maybe a whole nother podcast about raising teenage boys, but but what we're talking about is being able to have productive dialogue and normalizing wealth with in an age appropriate way with however old our kids or grandkids are. And the voice vote is really important, and especially once you kind of understand what it means, it's almost freeing from the standpoint. Can you talk a little bit more about that, and maybe an example, a real life example in a conversation around wealth and maybe estate planning?
Yeah, I mean, that is a great word, and I the idea of voice versus vote. And in a sense, it can be incredibly freeing. And what we'll often say to parents who are thinking of going into a family meeting and talking about their estate plans, their money, their wealth, and their estate plans, is that if we truly internalize this idea of voice versus vote, that we are giving a voice, we're sharing our thoughts, our wishes, our hopes around money, wealth, and estate plans, and then we're going to open the floor up to those who are going to be impacted by our decisions, giving them a voice, letting them ask any question. If we can truly internalize, mom and dad, that you are giving them the gift of a voice, but you are totally confident at the end of the day you've got the vote, then if someone says even something crazy like, hey, mom, dad, let's build a cotton candy factory in the backyard. It's only going to cost $150 million. Hey, son, that's an interesting idea, but it's not economically feasible and it's not in the cards. But hey, thanks so much for the idea. We don't have to get reactive. We don't have to be, we don't have to get angry. We don't have to get frustrated. We don't have to get reactive, and we can stay in relationship. And it's like there's a quid pro quo. We see this all the time in families when we're heading into this. The quid pro quo is that we are giving you a voice, an opinion, ask any questions, and we want to listen. And the deal back to us is that you understand and respect the fact that at the end of the day, mom and dad are going to make the call.
Right.
And that's freeing.
Yeah, it is freeing. And it even allows you to dive a little bit deeper in that conversation. Like, tell me about the why you think a cotton candy factory is a good idea. Like, let's dive into that, because you know we're not going to do it, but allows you to foster that conversation and maybe get at a deeper issue or something that where there is common ground.
Sure, you hit the nail on the head, right? And ask it. That's exactly the point. In fact, I missed it. You nailed it. When we're in that place, we can begin asking questions. And what's at the root of that could be, which would be really fun. I mean, it's not, on one level, cotton candy fan sounds like a really silly idea. But maybe our son, daughter wants to build something, wants to be entrepreneurial. And what, you know, member of the founding generation of a wealth creator doesn't want to see that entrepreneurial spirit pass in the next generation? So, and we only learn that because the first thing out of their mouth was a cotton candy factory. So great point, Terry. I couldn't agree more. The trick is When in voice and vote, it allows you the freedom to ask a ton of questions and explore. And by the way, not only do you get to the root of what could be really interesting, but in doing so, we are building relationship and we're building trust and we're creating safety. And that is the magic of multi-generational relationships and successful family wealth transitions.
Yeah, love it. So voice vote, little conversation cue for folks. Let's talk about another one that comes up all the time, and that's fair versus equal. Yeah. And this trips up a lot of families when they're doing their estate planning and planning. But it's also it's also before they pass, right? There's lots of these issues that come up in family dynamics. So can you talk about how we view fair equal?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. You're right, because what parent doesn't want to treat all their kids equally? And I remember my mom counting jelly beans and making sure everybody got the same number of jelly beans in their Easter basket. It's just a fundamental desire of all parents. And yet the reality is when we start talking about the complexity of estate planning, it is impossible. Terry, how long have you been doing this business? Have you ever seen a parent come up with an estate plan in which everybody down to the dollar gets exactly the same? And even, frankly, even if you do, the critical issue here is, to your point, that fair does not mean equal. Because what you think is fair and I think is fair are two very different things. And you may think that a dollar for, $100 for each one of us is the right thing. And I think it's a terrible idea because you got 12 times as much money as I do. Anyway, so this idea that fair means equal is a myth. And what we try to help, individuals, moms and dads, individuals understand is that fair is a perspective. What you think is fair and I think is fair equals is a mathematical equation. 1 + 1 = 2. We can all agree on that. The only way to address it is in dialogue. And It is virtually impossible to make it fair for everybody. And so the only way that we maintain relationship as we think about passing wealth is we engage in dialogue. Who is going to get, the home on the shore? What am I going to do with this family business? I want to pass it down to the next generation. Who's going to run it? Who's going to own it, et cetera. And all that, regardless of what the estate plan issue is, the only way we address the different perceptions that we have about what's fair is in dialogue.
Right. And we see it a lot, right? We see it a lot in family owned businesses, right? One of the children will work in the business. Another won't. And right there is an issue on the estate planning side of things, or even worse or even harder. They both work in the business, but at different levels and to a different degree. And then that gets sticky. So you're exactly right. It's dialogue. And sometimes as parents, we put an image of what's fair in our mind. That's not really held by our kids. So, really important.
It's so critical because at the end, on this issue, as an example, who has to live with the issue?
Mm-hmm.
The kids do. So why not engage them in dialogue about what they think is fair, what's not? And we've got opinions, and at the end of the day, as parents, it's our call, but they're the ones that got to live with, they got to live together, particularly to your point about the family business. You and I are brothers. You've been running it for 25 years with mom or dad, and I've been off, running a who knows what, dancing around skiing in Steamboat. And all of a sudden, we own the thing 50-50 because we're both brothers. I feel that. So look, I'm as much of a brother as he is. But you just spent the last 25 years building wealth there. So, but those are the complexities. You're exactly right.
Yeah. It's it comes up a lot. And then the other one, and again, just building or bringing forward conversation cues to help us all realize when these patterns, these hierarchical behaviors are coming, and how we can navigate through them productively. The other one that we see a lot come up, especially in when we start to feel the temperature rise, right, in arguments and whatnot, is the wish fear. And usually those arguments are wherever you see the temperature rise. It's rooted in fear, but we don't always see it like that.
It's a great point. And it's almost, you use the word conversation cue. And if it is a wonderful word, because when you see someone in your family starting to get angry, it's almost always at the root of it is some fear, a right. fear that I'm not being acknowledged, a fear that I'm not being treated fairly, a fear that my voice isn't being heard, I'm not being respected, I'm being so whatever it is, there's some fear there. And if as participants, players in this system with our family, if we can say to them, you know, Fred, Jane, Betty, what's your concern here? What's your fear? Can you talk to me about the core of your fear is? And the interesting thing about fears, on the other side of that coin, there's always a wish. And fears are hard because they're based in, you know, there's pain, et cetera. But if we can alternatively get Betty or Jane or Fred talking about the wish that's the other side of that fear, now we're talking about a positive thing, what we call a positive emotional attractor. And it brings the family together when we're talking about wishes. So that concept that you're referencing, Terry, of wishes, wish versus fear, we always say, look, if when we start off a meeting with a family is, can we get everyone, mom and dad, each of the next generation folks, just talking about what is their wish? Forget the taxes, the all the different things we've got in our portfolio, who's getting what. Just start off with a blank slate. Mom, dad, what's your wish? Next generation, I call them kids, but typically they're not kids, they're adults. They just happen to be adult children. What are your wishes? What are your wishes for the future? What are your wishes around what we've done and what we hope to do for the grandkids, for your kids, for the grandkids, for our philanthropy, fill in the blank, for the business if we have one, for the house on the shore, whatever we have. Let's just talk through what our wishes are, because it can be a wonderful place.
Well, you know, we started off, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek saying, you know, money will ruin our kids. That's the fear, right? And so from the onset of that, you kind of start in a hole. And the flip side to that, and it could be lots of things, because the fear doesn't necessarily define what the wish is. So the wish could be, you know, I want to my kids to have a healthy respect and drive and a healthy respect for wealth and what it can do for others and community. And, you know, it could be lots of different things. And it's a much more productive conversation starting there than, you know, money's going to ruin my kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good point. I remember talking to a couple and they were saying that they thought their kids weren't ready for the money, that they didn't want to, they were concerned the money, to your point, was going to demotivate him. They weren't right. ready for it. And I'm like, well, tell me about your kids. Well, one was a scientist for Nokia, and the other one was the daughter was a partner in a law firm in Chicago. Well, what's your wish? Well, the wish is that, you know, that they remain productive members of society and that we don't want money to change their lives, and we want their grandchildren to be, you know, to have an identity. And I'm like, that's wonderful. Let's just talk about that, because my guess is we can get there. But you're so right. So yeah, it just and I agree with you that the fear, we started off on a pithy kind of funny, did, you know, is it $10, is it $100 million, it ruins a kid. But the other side of that is a powerful place to start as parents, as individuals of wealth, as we think about what we want for this thing that we've accumulated over time and what we hope it does for ourselves, our communities, our family, our grandchildren, et cetera.
And I keep going back to the importance of voice vote in all this, because it just, if you can get through to that concept and that mentality, it just kind of provides air cover for all of these other aspects and allows you to relax a little bit around these conversation. We were talking the other day about, because most of the families, all the families that we're working with, were leaders in building their business. Right. And never once, I can guarantee you, as leaders, did they look at their team, at their business, and say, I don't want to hear anything from anybody. Like, because I said so is how this is going to work. Right. We all heard that from our dad, right? Because I said so. No, they wanted input. They wanted thoughts. They wanted feedback. on all this. Yes, they were going to make the decision, but it's through all of that, those conversations and feedback, that they made those decisions. So then to turn around and lead a family and not kind of have that same mindset, we all do it. We all can fall into that trap, but it doesn't really make sense in the scheme of things.
You know, it's so true. As leaders in our businesses, we will sit regularly across the table from our team, and the phones are away, the phones aren't ringing, the cell phones are on the side. What do you think? What do you think? How are we going to address this issue? This is the challenge, ABC. And how many times with our family members do we sit at a table, put the phones away, and just talk about what our wishes are? Where do we want to go? What are we going to do about the things that are matter so much to us as a family? It's a great point.
I'm sure there's an app to take care of all that, though.
Yeah, exactly. AI will address it. Yeah.
So we're talking on this, listening to this podcast, there are probably lots of builders, right? Sort of built businesses and wealth and whatnot. And really what we're talking about today is building relationship capital, right? All of this goes into strengthening those relationships and bringing you closer to the family, and then also, you know, just being able to kind of navigate some of these wishes that we have. So we've talked about these conversation cues and framed up kind of the issue, and I don't think anybody's listening to this is going to question whether there's a real issue here, and its importance. What would you say is, as far as like takeaways, like how do we put this into practice? And you know, one of the things that I always say in anything is it's all about forward progress. Like, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and you just got to start putting one foot in front of the other. There's like three analogies I just used right there. But what would your recommendation be to the families who this is important to and they want to start making progress towards it?
Great question. I'll back up for one moment. As we think about, so the first question is our legacy. Second question, who's part of the team that should be part of co-creating that legacy with us? Yep. And as we are making decisions about that we, and either we make decisions with our family, but also trusted outside advisors, ask yourself first, the decisions I'm making, are they going to create closeness to our family, or are they going to create distance? And that's gets back to that point of reflection about what are the intended consequences or outcomes versus unintended consequences or outcomes. But will this decision that I'm making about my money, my wealth, my estate plan, is that going to create closeness or distance? And if we use that as a broad filter for every conversation, every decision, frankly, when you go home tonight and see your spouse or someone you love, is the conversation we're having over to dinner creating closeness or distance? And obviously, past the salt is not one, but any substantive conversation, you have the opportunity to create closeness or distance. With that in mind, getting to a very practical response to your question, we would say, once you've identified those folks, start a conversation with the next generation individually and ask them, what are your wishes? What are your hopes? What are your fears? Do you have any concerns? What do you understand about my estate plans, what we're doing? The answer could be nothing, no sweat. Mm-hmm. The second step then is we'd love to see families begin having family conversations in which the senior generation, successor generation is in the room. And if you own a business, obviously part of it is a big part of it. What's our succession process look like? But even more broadly, we love to see families outline our estate plans. And when next generation folks hear estate plans, the word estate plan, they typically picture a lawyer standing there and there's a picture and there's lines going everywhere and there's the 1824 trust and all kinds of complexity. Mm-hmm. We want to throw that out the window. Our proposal is get together with your advisor and your family and identify the buckets of wealth that you've created over time. And most families have some kind of a portfolio. It might be marketable securities and cash. It might be a family business. It might philanthropy, deferred assets, insurance, legacy assets like the artwork or the home on the shore, fill in the blanks. So there are all these different buckets of wealth. So that's that. And when we create buckets, one of the questions next generation has is, well, and really frankly for mom and dad, is how much transparency are you willing to have about each one of these buckets? If you got $10, $10 in the marketable security bucket, are you willing to put a number on that? And our wish and our hope for families is that we keep on, if you think about transparency versus disclosure as a continuum, on the one end, disclosure, something happens when mom and dad die and the lawyer walks in and tells the kids how much, you know, what they're inheriting. And generally that leads to, you know, conflict and pain. Transparency is an act of dialogue. It's an act of trust building. It's an act of intimacy. And if we can become comfortable with transparency, we can share and talk about, this is the bucket we have in marketable securities. This is a bucket. This is what our family business is worth. This is what the fill in the blank is worth, the house and the shore. This is what we have in our philanthropy, and do that. And the thing that is powerful, Terry, because in our experience, when next generation folks, when they're in their 20s, 30s, or 40s, are looking at these different buckets with numbers on them, it starts to become real. And then, so then we go to voice and vote. And mom and dad, with their advisor, are going to have some ideas about who controls this now and where is it going to go? And the kids are wondering that. And what a wonderful conversation. Look, this is how much is here. We're thinking that with this bucket, we might divide it by four. The business, we might this. What are your thoughts? Voice versus vote. Create the dialogue.
And it comes down to communication. And you just kind of outline in a broad sense a structure around that communications. We work with and help families with their family meetings quite often. And it's a joy to do. And I would add to all that, for those that are kind of wondering and might be at different stages with kids at different stages, you can make this all age appropriate. Like maybe yes. You don't, maybe you just do the buckets and you don't put numbers behind them at a certain stage. And there's just lots of ways to exercise that muscle without, you know, kind of confusing the issue or getting too far along, depending on their ages and their ability to kind of grasp some of the more kind of complex conversations and whatnot.
Great point. And you hit the nail on the head, age appropriate. So you got a 24-year-old sitting there, you know, we're not advocating that the 24-year-old find out that when they hit 30, they're getting $100 million or something. Yeah, that's a silly example, mm-hmm. but you're absolutely right. It needs to be age appropriate. And part of your point also is, what is age appropriate for my kid? I mean, who knows? You're the parent. Needs to figure that out in dialogue. All our only wish in terms of that transparency versus disclosure continuum is that we are evolving towards transparency, moving in that direction. You know, and the other framework we think about in those meetings is this idea of today versus someday. Mm-hmm. And so often as parents, we tend to punt to someday these issues because, you know, we started talking about it. We had a little conversation. I feel good. I got a good, I'm very healthy, fill in the blank. But if we in these meetings can also frame up, these are the things we want to address with our family and our advisor over the next 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. These are things that we think can wait 3 to 4 years. Fantastic. But have a deliberate conversation about when and how we're addressing some of these questions and when these things are going to be happening. Because ultimately, what, you know, if you're a next generation person sitting in a room, just think about what are the things that are of interest to them. What is this bucket about? Who controls it now? What happens if you're not here, mom and dad? Who's going to control it then? And oftentimes, I mean, just as an example, Terry, I've worked with, you know, 30 folks in their 30s who thought they were going to inherit the family business. They thought they were going to be owners, only to find out. You know, Bank of America is going to be the trustee. And they're like, whoa, wait a minute. What do you mean?
Yeah.
So hence the need for dialogue.
In the need for dialogue. And that creates, again, that relationship or builds that relationship capital because you're building it. You're breaking it down if at 30 they realize, you know, something very different at that point. So this has been super helpful. I think we've given folks a lot to chew on and think about and help recognize, like, all these conversation cues, voice vote, fair equal, wish fear, closeness, distance, and then today versus someday. If maybe you can talk a little bit about the work that you do, as we kind of wrap this up, the work that you do for the Center of Fidelity Center of Family Engagement, and how those listening can benefit from that or take advantage if they want to learn more.
So we're a small unit, business unit, if you will, within Fidelity. And our mission is really to facilitate the generational wealth transfer, to ensure that this idea of family wealth transitions, the family wealth transitions are successful in whatever form the family wishes. If you own a family business, selling the family business isn't failure unless it happens because some lawyer and judge tell you got to do it. Mm-hmm. So the sale of a family business, as an example, can be a very successful outcome. We've simply transitioned asset classes from something making bricks and, you know, Dixie cups to cash that we can continue to be entrepreneurial around. And so I share that as an example because a successful family wealth transition is success is defined by the family. We want to help families define what success means for them and then have the dialogue skills that allows them to put that into practice. And our job is to work with advisors like you, Terry, and your firm, to help their clients do that job. And one of the fun things about working with you and your firm is that you've embraced it. And we've done an enormous amount of work with your team. And the interesting thing is, it is surprising to me today how few firms still do that, how few advisors do that. We heard a scary statistic. It's just reality. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a sector leader of a competitor of yours, and they said that, you know, when the first to die, I mean, so one of the two spouses, they lose the business 60% of the time. And that when second to die, meaning when the money goes to the next generation, they lose the business 96% of the time. And that is a reflection of the fact that the advisors are not working closely with their families, building authentic relationships, engaging in these dialogue issues with the families. Because one of the things we say all the time is advisors are part of the family wealth system. We're not confused. Advisors are not part of the family, but they are impacting decisions and they're helping individuals make decisions that are impacting the next generation. And so our mission, our passion is to help families more and the advisors that work with those families to do this family wealth transition thing successfully.
Yeah, it's super important and appreciate the work that you've done with our firm. And now, you know, all of our advisors are now trained to go out and run these family meetings and help families recognize some of these issues and work through building that relationship capital. As we unlock the true potential of our family's wealth, Fidelity and certainly the Center for Family Engagement have been really valued partners. So I appreciate you helping us today and framing all this up. I know there's lots more we could talk about, but I think this has been really helpful for today's discussion. I appreciate the time, Mike.
Yeah, Terry, it's been a pleasure, and it's been a pleasure working with you and your firm. So thank you.
Thank you to Mike McGran and the Fidelity Center for Family Engagement, who have both been valued partners to Parsion and the families we serve. At Parsion Private Wealth, what we're known for more than anything is partnering with business owners and their families to unlock the true potential of their wealth, helping them keep more of what they've built for their family and the causes they care about most. As a result of working with us, our families tell us they feel more clear and confident on what the future looks like for them and their family. Each family is unique and requires a personalized approach to achieve their goals, which starts with seeking the guidance of a trusted expert. If we can help, visit us at parsionpw.com. That's parsionpw.com. And to keep up with new episodes of What's Next, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Terry Cook, and thank you for listening to this episode of What's Next. Until next time.